Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sergio Garcia. I don't think anything, I've certainly never seen anything quite like that. I'd like to thank William Hill for their contribution to my summer holidays as well. Owen, is that something that, that one-to-one thing in golf, something that golf doesn't usually have, and it was that gladiatorial thing, or what was it? Was it the passion of Sergio? But what? Why was it so fantastic?
Because Garcia is a personality in sport who is so exuberant, who attracts fans and admirers, and who's had this extraordinary narrative of the kid who we thought for, who came in at the age of 19, and at that time we thought, wow, we've got a decade and a half of Garcia against Tiger Woods. It was set to be the sort of the greatest. It was set to be Palmer against Nicklaus for years and years, and it never happened because Garcia didn't have the heart or the soul or the mind or whatever. Who knows what it was. And we thought we'd lost him, and he just battled and he battled, and he got miserable, and now he's come out the other end.
Stuart, I was just thinking with Justin Rose and Sergio blasting it away at each other, it reminded me a little bit of yourself and Rob Andrew over the years.
Were you the Justin Rose, the more steady one then?
Yeah, I think probably Rob played the percentages a little bit more. I went for the Sergio bit, but I wasn't as popular generally. The other thing I loved about that, Steve, was the fact that we had the subplot. We had the boy wonders who have achieved, the Jordan Spieths and the Rory McIlroys, and we were all waiting for, well, I was, because I had a team and they were both in them, a big bet. We waited for them to come pouring through. They couldn't handle the pressure. And the great thing about that, you know, commentary kept saying they're looking at the scoreboard. As Garcia went up to 7, he went up to 8, these great players just couldn't handle it. And whilst obviously a huge amount of skill is required, it's a great reminder that at the highest level, all sport has a huge degree of psychological strength required.
Good point, Stuart. Adam, you love your golf. What did you make of it?
I thought it was brilliant, but first, just like to pay tribute to Justin Rose. I thought he showed himself to be a real class act in that. Mm. I mean, yeah. Sergio was a hugely popular winner. A lot of the players were tweeting, you know, go on Sergio and all that, but they weren't in any way denigrating Rose, but I thought he showed a lot of class.
Are we doing golf the whole way through?
Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us for The Ruck, the Times and Sunday Times rugby podcast. Just to remind you, you can subscribe to us. I hope you do. And you can leave reactions or reviews for us on any topic. We've got a fantastic panel here today, starting with Adam Hathaway, the token pop paper Red Top representative. Adam, after your last appearance, we're all desperate to know the latest on the Greyhounds.
Ninja Rascal came second at Crayford on Friday. Just got bullied out of the finish, so needs to toughen up a bit.
And what work-ons have you got for Ninja?
Well, like any rugby player, he's just got to do his extras.
Fair enough. Stuart Barnes is with us today. Barnes has been away at Swansea. Sorry, it sounds like he's been on Mars. He's been down to Swansea, where Leinster sneaked in. And also Owen Slott. Owen and I have just been talking about what a fine tranche of rugby we saw on the weekend. While we're here, we just should say best wishes to Brian Moore, one of our rivals in Pod Wars, who's recovering from a heart attack. Hope it's a rapid and complete recovery. First of all, we're going to discuss Aviva Premiership. Then Stuart is going to give us his views on the Guinness Pro 12. But what we have had this weekend is the record for attendances for one season, for one series, and by quite a number of people. Obviously, Owen, Adam and I loved the experience at Bath and Leicester on Saturday at Twickenham. Thought it was magnificent to get 61,000 people there, most of them dressed in blue, a long, long way from Bath. Was just fantastic. The atmosphere was tremendous. We may not all like the ranting and roaring, but it was good. Also a great game. One misery guts didn't quite see it like that. If you see the Times, it almost drips with Barnes's distaste for the whole thing. There was only 61,000 there after all. Misery guts, what have you got to say for yourself?
I thought it was a wonderful sort of nostalgic trip back in time to the days when Bath left Leicester was a final at Twickenham and everyone knew the pecking order in the club game. Bath first, Leicester, and then there was no one else really. And to me, my view was it was a wonderful event off the field, but I felt to a certain extent we got carried away with the off the field sort of extravaganza on it. And I felt brilliant as someone like Faletau played. Leaving a leaden-footed Leicester team for dead doesn't mean you're a British and Irish Lion. And whilst I think he is, I just felt that sort of summed up for me the fact that the game itself had nothing to do with the quality of the occasion. And great getting 61,000 there, and it worked out for Bath because they got the win. But, you know, I still think the most important thing about rugby is what happens on the pitch, and sometimes we get a bit carried away.
Have we got canned booze to bring in here, producer? Can we have some canned sort of noise?
Yeah, exactly.
Here we go now.
I have to say I don't agree because, you know, rugby can always go on being played at the Rec in front of 11,000 people. But what struck me when I left the ground after work on Saturday was an unbelievable number of little kids there. All wearing blue and white and black, and you know rugby is going to go down off the field if they can't pay the bills, Steve, and they can't attract more people.
I said it was a great game. I said it was a good occasion. It's fine.
But we all said it wasn't a great game. I mean, the thing is, it wasn't a great game for 60 minutes, but then it took off into the stratosphere because there was suddenly tries from nowhere. So you know, look, it wasn't a great game, no doubt about it. But I actually thought it was... we're partly teasing you because some of us don't like the ranting and roaring and Bath fans being told to clap their own team, etc. But it felt like something to me, anyway.
I actually bought a ticket. I paid some money into the coffers of Bruce Craig for that privilege on Saturday. And the atmosphere was fantastic. I bought a Banahan BAP. These are experiences you don't normally have in the press box.
If I'd have known there was a Banahan BAP, I wouldn't have had any criticism.
What was in the BAP?
Pork and stuffing. I don't know why it was called a Banahan BAP. They could have called it a pork BAP. But anyway, I was out there with the people. Matt Tamua sat behind me.
It was a brilliant occasion, but it was a relief when the game kicked off to get a bit of peace and quiet because that bloke was just screaming and ranting and there's just no need for it.
No, I agree. But... you know, I thought he was terrible. The rest of it was all right. But you've got to get more people into the game. And let's be fair. You could look out the back of the Twickenham through the press box window, where there was 61,000 in front of you, and there was 71,000 in the stadium that you could see with the naked eye from where we were standing.
If we can join in with the misery, there was nothing worse than the stadium announcer at Twickenham during the World Cup. I mean, we've got to agree. We can all agree on that. I'm with anyone, any miserablest in the world on that one.
Oh, he was absolutely abysmal, but he didn't realise how abysmal he was. We're not talking about John Taylor now, who was quite mellifluous. We were talking about that ranting bloke who was doing the interviews.
He was an ex-something, wasn't he?
His ex-interview.
He was an ex-something. Yeah, he was.
He was an ex-talent.
The voice of God.
Yeah, that was before the tournament as well. let's just look in a little bit more detail because started off, I thought, with Sale for a team placed in 9th or 10th position, playing extremely well on Friday night and have definitely some players which, if they keep hold of, the likes of Haley, James, these guys, can be really something if they can keep hold of them. Anyone else got a view on Sale? Because I thought it was a terrific game.
I think they're developing very well. If they get a front five, they've got a back line next year who will take them a few places. Yeah, I agree with that.
I think Eddie Jones was up at the Sale training ground last week, probably having a look at people like Haley to take to Argentina. And Sale have also got to play Leicester and Bath in the last three rounds, so they could have a big say on the fourth place.
Okay.
Do you think Eddie would look at those Curry boys for that Argentina tour? Because he said he might take two or three of the under-20s to Argentina. You presume that one of them is Zach Mercer from Bath, and yeah. I'm not sure who the other two would be.
He's name-checked Mercer already. I reckon they've probably got a shout. They're highly rated, aren't they?
Okay. Saracens would put Harlequins away. John Kingston said not by as much as the score suggests, but it seemed to me that they were pretty well in control. Just wonder, Stuart, how do you see the current situation developing between Munster and Saracens? Because the whole idea of the new look was that there was no free ride. You had to play every week in the Pro 12 to make sure you qualified. Well, the collapse of the Welsh teams is such that your grandmother could have played for Munster and Leinster and still qualified easily. Munster all had a whole week off on Saturday. Saracens have got to keep plugging away because they want to have a home tie. Big advantage?
Well, yes and no. No, in the sense that Munster have got rest, but they haven't got game time with their first 15. I was speaking with one of the Leinster coaching team at half-time in the game on Saturday by the name of Stuart Lancaster, and he was making the point that on a Saturday, the IRFU said Henshaw can play, but Gary Ringrose needs a rest. Presumably next week, Ringrose will play and Henshaw will get the rest. So as they look towards Clermont, they're not really getting it together, and the same applies to Munster. And bear in mind, it's not just Munster's fault. You know, this is a union situation, Steve. You know, if the game had evolved differently when it went professional in England, we would be in the same situation. Thank God it hasn't. But Munster would have liked to have several more of their players playing against Glasgow than they had. And in the end, though they had home advantage, you know, that was a tough game for them because Glasgow had a pretty strong team there. So I don't think it's a big advantage for Munster as you think. I think it's a disadvantage as well. What I would say is I watched Toulouse get hammered by Toulon on Sunday afternoon. And as a racing man, I do believe in form lines. And Munster's sort of scruffy victory against Toulouse, when you look at how Toulon hammered Toulouse, it worries you. And I think the form line-wise, Saracen, even though it's in the Aviva Dublin, I think they're strong favourites to win this one.
Okay. Adam, Leicester, you had a good look at them on Saturday. They're well behind in fourth place. It does look like they're currently favourites to make it. Have they now got any ability at all or momentum to challenge away from home in the playoffs, either Saracens or Wasps, or Exeter?
Well, unless Matt O'Connor's got a magic wand, you can't see him going to any of those who are currently in the top three, Wasps, Exeter or Saracens, and winning. I mean, on Saturday it was strange looking at a Leicester team, thinking of things in the Lions teams in the summer, and basically there's only two candidates. I mean, a few years ago there would have been half a dozen.
Yeah, you're right there. Okay, just a word about the Premiership itself. Seems to be in good health, Owen. I've started covering it a little bit before you, but I can remember being at Roslyn Park in front of 600 people, etc. Now, five-figure crowds are very much the norm. 21,000 at Wasps, obviously loving it as well. To be fair to Premiership rugby, we've been critical. They have their critics, but they've established a competition in the teeth of the lack of preparation for professionalism, etc., has gone from strength to strength.
The attendance of Curve is steadily going upwards. I wonder about the week. Obviously, the weekend they had those two big games, but there's been a lot of talk of summer rugby recently, and quite controversially so. But a lot of people came out the weekend because it was a fabulous day and just a gorgeous weekend to go and sit and watch sport. So is that a part of it? It was there were loads of tries at the weekend. I saw nine at Wasps on Sunday. How many were there at Twickenham on Saturday? I mean, it was all out there to enjoy. Is summer a part of it? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think you should go too far in that direction. But you get good games, you get good weather.
I think that just get the funny farm on the phone for Slotty.
Exactly.
Will you?
And should be watching cricket.
Yeah, I know. And but we let him off that minor gaffe about summer rugby. Stuart, you've been broadcasting a lot this season on the Pro 12. I did a piece on the weekend about the collapse of Wales. I mean, you know, the Ospreys couldn't even put away Stade Français in the quarter final of the second competition. One of the teams is up for sale and may even stop. What's the temperature in the rest of it?
It's positive because the top two are good. Munster and Leinster would be highly competitive if they were in the Premiership. They both got big squads. They come at the game a different way. Until 3 weeks ago, you know, the Ospreys looked a very good team and they've just gone off the rails. But teams do that, you know. It's happened with Bath and Leicester on occasions this season. Just compared to last year, it's very healthy. Last year, after a World Cup, the lack of strength in depth told, and Connacht won what was a very poor tournament. This season, it's going to take a good team to win it, so it's much better.
This time next week, it'll be, I think, only 24 hours before the Lions team is picked, and that's when we have to stop picking all our Lions teams. Guys, a lot of games on the weekend involving a lot of Lions, to which Warren would have been glued. What did we see that sort of changed our thinking? Anyone who's come through, anyone who's fading badly?
I think outside half, the potential battle for the third place, Dan Bigger took a step backwards, and George Ford, I've wavered with him, but he showed at times again at Twickenham, in front of a big crowd, he can play. Look, I've got to say, I said you can't say Toby Faletau is a must because he played against a slightly better than average Premiership team. And yep. Same applies to Ford. But I thought Bigger just looks a competitive soul who doesn't have that feel. Ford is a fantastic footballer with a great feel. And I felt that there was a bit of a flip-flop there. And if I was Warren Gatland, and if I thought, who is it going to be? My mind wasn't made up. I'd go Ford. Faletau cemented the situation, obviously. And I think Anthony Watson may have caused a little bit of head scratching, not if he goes or not, but where does he play? You know, last week I was casting around for Simon Zeebo. We were all, you know, we had Rob Carney, we've had all sorts of fullback. And I remember many years ago watching Bath, and I wrote a piece and I got laughed at for saying he reminded me of Cullen. Not how good he was, but the way he picked a line. Hmm. And if he had Sexton and Farrell putting the right balls into space, I just saw bits and pieces at Twickenham that just reminded me what I wrote about 4 years ago, the kid's exceptional talent.
I agree. I think he's approaching world class. I mean, to be...
As a wing, Steve?
I know exactly what you're saying, but I think the way...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
The way he appeared on the far on the left wing to take that lovely pass from Banahan suggests he's coming into his own and can play fullback. Anthony Watson, Slotty, can he play 15?
Yeah, I think he can. For me, it's a bit mental with Anthony Watts, or a confidence thing. He came into the England squad later than Jack Nowell for that very reason, that Nowell has this sort of, I can take on the world, I'm not scared of anything sort of confidence. And Watson didn't have that. He needed time to feel that he belonged in the England squad. And that would be the same for a Lions experience. He might come in slightly timid and would need to find his feet. So probably would play a wing rather than fullback. I think we all agree that eventually he or Elliot Daly will be the England fullback. I think probably Watson actually, but I think he'd be I think he could well be a Test wing.
Okay, who have you seen?
Well, I spoke to Watson after the game on Saturday, and he was very keen to say that he loved playing fullback for Bath, basically because the other players they had in their back three. Then we asked him, has it been discussed at England level, and whether he was telling the truth or not. He said no, but obviously Eddie's got him in mind as a 15 of the future.
Sure. Okay. Who else have you seen?
Well, Faletau was obviously one who proved his fitness, if nothing else, because we know he's a world-class player. I just want to bring up a point that Barnsley wrote in the paper on Friday and wonder whether Ben Youngs is slipping down the pecking order with Wigglesworth coming up the rails.
Stuart?
I think if...
You finally came on board the Wigglesworth bandwagon after an absence of 25 years, but...
Not quite. I gave him man of the match against France, Steve, on his debut. That was game.
Sorry.
Got it right. The premise of my argument is only age is keeping him out of the England team. He's by far the best scrum half in the Premiership. 12 clubs. Forget about English or not, he's the best.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't an age issue, he'd be playing for England. If he was playing for England, you can imagine that he'd be playing quite well. If he was playing quite well for England, we would be talking about him for the Lions. Ergo, I think he's got every reason to be considered. And this stuff about there's enough good rugby in the Six Nations to look elsewhere is palpable nonsense. I mean, you open your mind, you don't close it.
Until Saracens' game started expanding more this season than before, we hadn't seen him do much with the ball in hand and challenge players himself.
No, I'm sorry, but if you look at that great Sale team in 2006, one of the reasons Farrell looks so good is that Wigglesworth, people don't say he passes brilliantly. It's the most important thing, more important than box kicking, everything, because you have no back play if you can't pass. Wigglesworth has always been a very good passer. Ben Youngs, in contrast, is a poor one. And I think he's a sort of bloke who makes a 10 look good without us. Sometimes we forget because see the 10 doing the fancy things.
I get that. I agree with that. It's just that the bits that Youngs and Kerr sometimes do, and I'm not arguing for their inclusion in the lines ahead of him, But the idea that Wigglesworth is the ultimate nine all of a sudden, I don't think he's proved that enough yet.
I think he has. I mean, the other day I just thought he was absolutely magnificent. He was electric. He was the engine that kept the whole thing ticking. And I've been supportive of Richard since 2007. I just think he's the ideal man. I mean, Ben Youngs was trying desperately to prompt someone through the gap on Saturday, never succeeded. And to me, if we say that Conor Murray and Rhys Webb are going to be the starters, well, I mean, Ben Youngs is really someone in roughly their style. And I think they really should look at either Wigglesworth or Gareth Davis to give them an extra match-busting option. But I think Wigglesworth is at the towering peak of his game. I don't think he's ever been so good.
Also, are we really going to see a all-singing, all-dancing Lions team in every match? I mean, can you imagine Wigglesworth in the rain in New Zealand at midweek game and fists are flying? It'd be great.
During the Wasps Saints game, in those periods where Wasps weren't giving the ball away or someone wasn't scoring a try, I kept the binoculars trained a bit on the England captain. I mean, he's someone who's trying to really make an impression. You know, he's been coming back to fitness. We know all that. We've been watching him trying to come back to something. And I watched him go from ruck to ruck, desperately trying to make an impression and just not quite managing it at any point at all. He did all the bits right, which is probably why he will go with the Lions tour, probably rightly so, but he could not make the sort of impression on the game.
I think if Eddie Jones hadn't told us how many times Hartley was a great captain for England, Hartley wouldn't be in the England team and he wouldn't even be talked about for the Lions. I know exactly what you're saying, Owen. He is trying hard, but 2 years ago there was a hooker called Hartley who could offload. He had good hands. People, you know, they like to see Hartley as the big bad villain. He could do a lot. He's just, you watch him now and nothing comes from nothing. I wouldn't take him because he's like a racehorse that's got ability, but it hasn't shown it for a long time.
Just coming back to my bolter in a minute. Just another observation on Watson. They have Anthony Watson and Liam Williams there, who can both play 15. So it's one of those things you could just see, give him a game earlier on at 15 and see how it goes, I think. Anyway, the bolter of the week, unquestionably, is Duncan Taylor for me. I just thought he was immense. He only just come back after a long absence, which must have driven him mad. I think Scotland missed him terribly. I think he's a big guy, a really big guy, but athletic. I think he's got hands. I think he can shift offline. And I just thought he was extraordinarily good at Wembley on Saturday. I've heard not quite so effusive reports of Robbie Henshaw. I don't think he's playing well at all for Leinster. And I think Taylor can play 12 or 13. And I'd be very, very disappointed if Warren's not got his microscope on Duncan Taylor.
Are they going to go the big ball carry? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me in the end.
Gatland's not averse to the odd big ball carry, is he?
I wouldn't be surprised if Jamie Roberts gets picked.
Yeah, neither would I. Neither would I. The Lions is still a real open book. It's not settled. I remember in 2013 we knew almost all of them by now, but at the moment still very, very fluid. OK, we're now going to go down south. Recently, we've heard two sides of Super Rugby. Apparently, some of the New Zealand teams are playing some great stuff. There's something on YouTube and online of what's meant to be the best try ever scored from last weekend's games. If you look at it, there's about 11 missed tackles in it, which slightly debases it for me. But fair play, what you do as a consenting adult in your own time is fine with Super Rugby. Also, a part of it seems to be dying a death. One team, either the Melbourne Rebels or the Western Force, both announced some such great fanfare some time ago. One of them's going to go. Two South African teams are going to go. Japanese teams held on by the skin of its teeth. Stuart, you still watch that stuff in your spare time, even though you don't admit it. What's happening with Super Rugby? Has it got too bloated and the bubble's now been pricked?
Yeah, in an attempt to make the pool so wide, they've lost all depth, and it's a big problem. I mean, I wouldn't say it's dying a death, Steve. What I would say is that the expansion was too great. They stretched themselves. Australia has never had the depth of union talent for five teams. Australia has always done brilliantly, and we've always said, considering how few players they are. Now, they've tried to go to Perth to move it to Western Australia, and obviously Melbourne as the second city. It hasn't worked there because rules is so strong. And I think from an Australian point of view, the best thing that could happen for Michael Checker and Australian rugby would be to lose one, to have one less team and to have more strength. My big worry is South Africa. And that's a real disappointment. And it's all to do, I think, with the politics of what's going on there. South Africa should be able to have five teams. South Africa is traditionally one of the two great rugby nations. And to say they are in the same boat as the Aussies and can only manage four, well, I think that's an indictment on where South Africa is at the moment. As for the others, Argentina is always going to take time, even more so with the Sunwolves. Start of this talk, we're talking about, isn't it wonderful? We're getting 61,000 there. We're talking about the commercial viability of Premiership. Well, they're trying to do the same there. It's not working at the moment, but you can understand why they've got a team in the Far East.
Is this a warning for the Pro 12 when they talk about trying to tie up with America and this sort of thing?
I see no great virtue in America other than the fact that it's a big fanfare in the press and television, and a few of us get a good junket to go to New York or Boston.
My two boys get up on Saturday morning and say, Dad, you've got to look at this, it's amazing. And I can certainly see what they like about it. Overall, how it's contributed to the decline at the moment, who knows how long it's going to go on for, of Australia and South Africa. I'm not entirely sure. I agree with Barnsley completely that Australia has to slim down and have four stronger teams rather than five weak ones. I just wonder, if the Lions tour is going to Australia or South Africa at the moment, what would we be thinking? Would we be thinking we could do this 3-0? I mean, would it excite us as much? So going to New Zealand is the biggest test of them all, certainly with things at the moment. But we like the picture of world rugby as it is, with those Southern Hemisphere teams being really strong. And I find it really concerning for the long-term future of the global game that those countries are struggling at the moment. And it might just be a trend. Australia especially, I think, will bottom out. South Africa could do.
We couldn't see the Lions touring South Africa now and losing to any of the Super Rugby franchises.
No, Lions.
No, on the basis that there's no South Africans playing rugby in South Africa. I think it's about 900 playing in Europe.
Adam, what, Super Rugby?
I must admit, I don't watch a lot of it. Doesn't really do a lot for me.
Steve, I watch as much as I can.
Yeah.
I watch all the New Zealand stuff because I'm going to have to commentate on them in the summer. Yeah, so, you know, if there's a few All Blacks out, there'd be some young kids coming through. A few years ago, it was most of the time a labour of love. Now it feels like a job watching it. But I think Sanzar have done the right thing because they had to act. You know, I think they got it wrong. They overacted. They've done the right thing by at least trying to stream it back.
But the derby games between the Kiwi teams are strong, though, aren't they?
Yeah, but
I mean, those are big games.
That's got nothing to do with Super Rugby.
Exactly.
That's New Zealand rugby, and that's why New Zealand rugby is sort of light years ahead of just about everyone. I mean, you talk, Tone, about we went to Australia now and should beat them 3-0. Would it be exciting? To be honest, 4 years ago, I thought we went there and Lions should have beaten them 3-0. Australia are a better team now than they were 4 years ago, which is a warning not to get too carried away about the Lions, especially as they're in New Zealand.
Good point about South Africa, though. It's just gone so soft, you feel sorry for them. And also, the country itself, I don't know if anyone's read R.W. Johnson's latest book about South Africa. I mean, the absolute pandemic corruption, horrific corruption, and what he describes as the criminalisation of the society there is terrifying. I mean, you just wonder whether, never mind about rugby, when the Lions go there in 4 years' time, whether South Africa will be there. But anyway,
when you think, Steve, 1995, lots of us were there for that World Cup. That was the most exhilarating sporting event of my life because we all had hope. It was 1 year after Mandela had come back. And the ANC was the Rainbow Nation government. And it was so exciting. And that's what makes it so depressing now.
And also, you can see with it's more inexplicable in South Africa, because in Australia, rugby union is the fourth or fifth sport in South Africa. It's, number one or two, barring soccer.
Yeah.
OK, that just about wraps it up for this week. Just before we go, we're going to go back to Sergio, King Sergio. El Cordobes Garcia. Owen, what was your Sergio moment in rugby?
Do you want me to give mine in Spanish as well, like you did?
Yeah, well, you're probably not as fluent as I am.
No, it's impressive. All right, I'll start off with English. A Sergio moment for me, so what sort of the character of the Sergio moment was we've been waiting for a very, very long time for that to happen and actually had given up that it would.
Yeah.
I didn't think Wales were going to win a Grand Slam again. Professionalisation of rugby, I thought the rugby's going in one direction. Bigger nations, bigger war chests, we'll walk off with it. 2005, Wales get over the line again for the first time since the 1970s. And I remember that day. I remember the colour of the streets of Cardiff beforehand, the expectation, the hope. And I remember Kevin Morgan's running away to score the try in about the 65th minute to basically sew the whole thing up. I thought that was an amazing day, a great day. Just one of those days for sport which says it doesn't always happen the way you expect.
Stuart, what's your equivalent in rugby of Sergio last night?
Where else but Bordeaux? Who else but Bath? My old mates were coming to the end of their tether. For me, Bath is about people. It's not about the place. And there were still people like Jerry there, and Bath played Brive, and it was their last throw of a team that had been undoubtedly the best in England, and had there been a European Cup 10 years earlier, we'd have been quite dominant and won it a few times. It was the last throw. Bath won it, and even on Sky, where alcohol is strictly forbidden, I was able to crack a bottle of champagne with tears coming down my eyes as Mark Durden-Smith interviewed me, to my great embarrassment.
It's not one of your golf anecdotes, is it?
No, it's not, and it's not a dog race either.
Right.
We wait so long for an underdog to win a knockover really big nation at a World Cup. You can always virtually predict most of the pool games, but Japan against South Africa in Brighton last year was absolutely fantastic. In 2015, made even better by the fact that one journalist who was sitting next to me, who's no stranger to this podcast, sat down before the game and said, "This is the problem with the World Cup, games like this where the big boys will overrun the minnows." It was an absolutely staggering day.
Who said that?
Nick Kane of the Rugby Paper.
Oh, right, excellent. Oh, bloody hell, thank God. Mine also involves somebody in this room. I always I've always seen rugby as a massive forward, beasting, brutal affair. I also like it when gorgeous touches like Matt Banahan's little pop pass. I love things like that. I love Anthony Watson's long runs. Some time ago, when Paul Barnsley was kept out of the team by Rob Andrew, I thought it was unfair, not because Barnsley and I were contemporaries at the same school, but because it was just so unadventurous and boring, and they didn't have to do it the way they did. So when my friend Barnes came in to play Scotland, Dewi Morris, was it?
It was Dewi, threw
an absolutely ridiculous pass over your head. You almost had to be lifted to do it, to catch it. But when you caught it and came down to the ground, you shot off with your traditional 30-yard burst of pace, which was always preceded you falling in a heap. But you did make a glorious break. And then Jeremy Guscott came floating up on the outside. At the exact moment when your momentum died, he took off with the fastest burst of speed I've ever seen on a rugby field, even if you include Carlton and Isles, the American sprinter. And I just thought that was such a vindication for so many things. Yourself, Jack Rowell, the way Bath did it, and it showed that rugby could be played in that way. I just thought that was a fantastic Sergio moment. That's it from The Ruck this week. Just thanks a million to Owen Slott, Stuart Barnes, Adam Hathaway, who's just off to go to the Dogs.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.